Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Prince Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Sarah Gon. Let's get into the news of today, and I think we're going to focus today on our coalition negotiations in KZN. Now, as for the national coalition agreements, it does seem as though some sort of deal is on the verge of being reached. There is a finalization, or at least a sort of preliminary agreement that will probably be finalized today, and then the final version will only be discussed after the deadline for the election of a new government has passed on Friday. So things are pretty tense. There's very little time left. But let's talk a little bit about how KZN is shaping up. It looks an awful lot like the national coalition agreements are going to have a big influence over what is decided at the provincial level. In fact, this was explicitly said by the DA's chairperson in KZN, Dean McPherson, who said, speaking to the media, "We have made good progress today between the parties that would form the KZN provincial government. The last hurdle is always the steepest to climb, as the agreement for KZN will be subject to the finalization between parties at a national level. We hope this will be concluded before the KZN provincial legislature sits on Friday at 10 a.m. Now, that would be one hell of a Frankenstein coalition in KZN that McPherson is talking about. It would be the DA, the ANC, the IFP, and the tiny National Freedom Party, which is a breakaway from the IFP and has only one seat in the provincial legislature, forming a coalition government together. While it seems as though there's progress made on that one, as he pointed out, there's no finalization. At the same time, there's pushback inside the ANC against the possibility of forming an alliance with the DA, with the South African Civic Organization in KZN rejecting any agreement with the ANC, between the ANC and DA, and saying that the ANC must support an MK premier candidate in KZN. And we also see the MK party looks like it's ready for last-minute talks with the IFP. It's announced that it is reaching out to the IFP on a number of issues, hoping to get it into a coalition agreement in the province. According to an MK spokesperson, the conditions of a negotiation between the IFP and MK would be bringing back dignity to the Zulu Kingdom, Kings and Isiduna, fast-tracking service delivery to people in KZN and stopping corrupt activities, catapulting the province to be a major economic hub of South Africa, and many more important opportunities that will make KZN the center of attention in the country. Now, Sarah, there's a lot in there, but what do you make of all this? It looks like MK is a little bit worried that it might be shut out of power in KZN. What do you think?
Well, I think it's probably realizing that clearly going the legal route, a bit of Stalingrad strategy there, and as we know only too well, cannot be relied on at this point. And so MK is suddenly scurrying into the negotiations. Otherwise, as you said, I think if we run the risk of sort of no results, sort of equal, and either way, KZN, I think one could describe as an SH1T show in the future. I think the fact that, they're sort of saying bring back the sort of dignity of the traditionalists of the king and of the tradition, I don't think the MK is going to bring back anything of the sort, and I think there might be some regret in the long term that the so-called dignity of tradition is going to become a very unhappy group of people. And also, we know, I mean, this is a vanity project for Zuma. So all the talk about turning the KZN into, I don't know, the new Manhattan or whatever, it's not likely to be terribly successful. And, the organizations like the South African National Civics Organization, which is aligned to the ANC, which is very unhappy that the ANC has not gone into bed with the MK, it's almost, and we'll talk about it, but it's almost part of the coalition of scoundrels. I mean, we haven't seen the civics organization for years, and it came about in the heady days of the early 90s when the UDF was formed, and we had all that sort of intense political contestation. So I think basically anything that involves the MK in government, I mean, not that it won't try to be a disruptive force in opposition, but in government, it would not be a pretty sight.
Yeah, it's very clear, and if we have some time, we'll get onto this shortly, but that MK is in large part driven, much like the ANC is, by patronage concerns, and that part of the impetus for the formation of MK has been the concern that the sort of old Zuma tenderpreneurs have, you know, not done well under President Ramaphosa, who has supported different interests around the country. And it's a really big problem for MK if they don't get access to provincial resources when the negotiations and the dust settle, because that means they're going to have to wait another 2 years until they can get their hands on some kind of government pot when the municipal elections happen. It's also possible maybe that they could try and get a whole bunch of ANC councillors to resign and capture a number of municipalities that way. But even so, this is really rolling the dice. And in many places, MK would still have to fight an uphill battle against either the IFP or the ANC in order to secure absolute control of a number of municipalities in KZN. So I think this explains why MK is suddenly talking to the IFP. I think their preferred partner would have been, of course, the ANC, but their initial sort of move here has been to kind of delegitimize the whole election and claim the ANC is, you know, stole it and that sort of thing. In the words of Black First, Land First President Andile Mkutama, he said on Twitter or on X, "President Zuma is creating a revolutionary crisis. Once the biases of the judiciary are fully exposed, the masses of our people shall turn revolutionary and no institution of the bourgeoisie shall hold them back. We then entering the phase of revolutionary insurrection school." I don't know why I said school at the end there, but anyway. I think that may have been sort of the strategy. It was to create a kind of crisis and sort of intimidate the country into giving him some kind of concession. The sort of implied threat here is that there would be riots like there were back in July of 2021. But despite MK's best efforts to raise the temperature in the country, I mean, I could very well be wrong, and the next week we'll have to see, but it doesn't look like a major sort of revolution is going to break out anytime soon in the country. And in fact, Poland Foundation suggests that this coalition agreement between the DA and ANC is kind of popular.
Well, I think that, you know, we go back to the popularity, to the conservatism of the average South African, and that would apply in KZN as much, if not more, than most places. So that's the one thing. I think the other thing is that the MK, for whatever range of strange reasons, decided to go the sort of legal route of putting a stop to the creation of a government, so far has backfired. So it's had to scuttle back to a democratic means of getting power. And if it doesn't get power, it doesn't have access to, as you say, the resources that can spread the patronage around. So I think that's part of the problem when you have such a, I mean, talk about, you know, a wide range, a broad church of interests in the AMK. They could find themselves on the wrong end of one or other, or a group of interests that just, you know, either does or doesn't want to go the revolutionary route. So it's by no means stable, and there's no guarantee that, you know, some sort of violent insurrectionist type thing may not happen. But I think you're essentially looking at one of the ironies of Jacob Zuma trying, who's really not a constitutionalist, trying to somehow get in there, but using the rule of law and the courts to do so. But that isn't succeeding either just yet. So, you know, he's had to actually go let's negotiate. It shows that this party is really all about Zuma. And people are going along for a variety of different reasons, and I'm not sure he can satisfy all of those constituencies.
And I think Zuma convincing the country that he's, you know, the great victim of the courts and the constitution is really not going to work because of the fact that the country is very polarized on him. So there is a sort of 20 to 30% of South Africa who is very favor of Zuma, and those are presumably mostly people who voted for MK in this election. I'm sure there's also some EFF and ANC voters in that crowd. But a lot of the country, something like 60%, has a negative opinion of him and considers him pretty much a bad dude. So getting those people around to your point of view that, you know, all the courts are all just being so mean to me and abusing me and obstructing the will of the people, and actually I won the election, doesn't really cut mustard here. And I think it's his strategy is failing, and MK is going to have to adjust, because if they decide to continue down this road of not taking up their seats in Parliament, like we discussed yesterday, they're really going to find themselves sort of on the sidelines, not able to capture the limelight, I think, in the right way. But, you know, I could be wrong. If all sorts of trouble breaks out in KZN, I'm sure MK will come back into the spotlight. But I'm not really sure that's going to make them much more popular. I know that from various media interviews and things that have been done over the past couple of years, a lot of people who are involved in those July 2021 riots are not very proud of that period. I remember there was a story a while ago which had people who took part in the looting saying, you know, actually we regret it.
I think the problem is also that, you know, after years of having EFF style disruptions in Parliament and the annoyance that that created broadly, the idea of MK sort of not going in and sort of trying to argue by all accounts spuriously that, you know, not having their seats taken up means that nothing can happen, I don't think that's going to sit well with the more conservative elements that would have supported the MK purely because they feel disappointed by the ANC. Not the shysters in the taxing industry or the mafia, construction mafia, or the et cetera, who've gone behind probably Sanker, who've gone behind MK. But I think he may have relied too much on his popularity in Natal to determine his policy. And by not paying enough attention to what support he actually has, or more particularly hasn't got at a national level, he's kind of misfired on strategy in that regard.
Yes. I think what's been interesting about the results is that MK did, I think, better than expected outside of KZN, and yet in KZN it still failed to get a majority. You know, this would be a completely different situation if Zuma had managed to get 51% in KZN, so just a little bit better than he actually did. You know, the MK would be in a far stronger position to at least say, you know, we've got KZN and now we can focus on the rest of the country. But now he has to fight this sort of awkward rearguard action to, you know, try and get a hold of power in KZN. Of course, having a complex deal between the IFP, DA, ANC, and NFP, that just sounds like a recipe for something that could fall apart at any minute.
I think we could see a sort of bouncing both ways, which means, you know, fall apart, go to MK, fall apart, go back to the ANC, DA. Either way, you know, it's maybe it'll end up with sort of no real governance, and maybe you're better off with no government at all in KZN in the long run. But I think it speaks quite a lot, and this might have one element of why he went to court, and that is that for whatever reason, and I don't credit him with him being sound reasons, he actually assumed that he would have the majority in KZN, and his real shock may have come in the fact that he hasn't. That whatever he did that he thought would do it didn't work sufficiently, or didn't work in, you know, whatever it is. So, I mean, he, you know, Jacob Zuma is a scoundrel of the biggest order. I mean, he ruined this country economically, and it just got taken down further down that road to sort of economic purgatory or extinction. I'm not sure which. So I'm not sure he's thought of this through well enough to be, you know, to in the long run actually survive. We can only hope.
We shall have to see. But of course, Zuma has proven to be a talented politician over and over again. So, you know, maybe he's a step ahead of us poor analysts. We shall have to see, I think. We don't really have time to talk about it properly now, but I recommend just having a little bit of a look at a thing on the Daily Maverick, just kind of breaking down what I think most people who have looked at MK have kind of suspected. And that is the various factions that have kind of come together to make up the MK party. I think one of the ones not mentioned here is, I believe there are some, or it's mentioned kind of in passing, is that there are a number of churches in KZN which have backed the MK party. And I think that's been a significant motivator of support. But just briefly, the Daily Maverick story here breaks down MK's support as being a mixture of disgruntled ANC supporters, particularly Zulu speakers, who are unhappy with the direction the ANC has taken and with the victory of Ramaphosa in the 2017 ANC conference. Old MK fighters who are still sort of kicking around and apparently hold lots of important positions within the structure of the party. Various tenderpreneurs who were very much favored by the Zuma government back when he was the president, but now I've been kind of cut out of the situation as is described here. People were upset that those in the ANC government are quote unquote eating alone rather than including them. A number of taxi owners in KZN are apparently affiliated with the party. The construction mafia, of course, which basically demands a cut of every single construction project in the province and also in the country, and the normal assortment of party hoppers. You know, these are politicians who every time there's a new party will leave whatever party they were in, jump on board and see if they can get a foot in there, which, you know, this happens to every single political party in the country at some point. Sara, do you agree with the Daily Maverick's assessment? I think this is pretty spot on.
I think possibly the only advantage of this motley crew is that there's very little ideology there now, and even the not so motley, you know, they're not there for ideological reasons, they're there for economic reasons. The others the same, but for different type of economic reasons. And I think that, you know, I don't think Zuma can rely on stability. I think that they're all a bit too fluid. They all have different interests. And remember, Zuma's not young and fit and as well as he once was. So that could be the ultimate fly in the MK's ointment.
Yes. No, it is a big weakness, I think, of the party. There's one other group of supporters of the MK party who are essentially the kind of people who back the more radical parts of the ANC and EFF, who like MK because it, you know, wants to nationalize everything and, you know, destroy the capitalist economy or whatever it is. So I think there is a little bit of ideology behind the party, but I think you're right to say that it's vastly dominated by a lot of economic interests, which go hand in hand with the ideology, but that's a discussion for another day. Yeah, this has been an interesting week to be a political analyst because we're sort of, in a sense, waiting a little bit for the other foot to fall, trying to see what sort of government we get. It's a little bit difficult to say, you know, whether this election's results have been ultimately positive or negative for the country because we don't really know what we're going to get. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens on Friday when all the drama comes to a head. Anyway.
Yes.
That's all the time we have for today. I hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.